Many disciplines contribute to the success of human-robot interaction. Computer scientists and psychologists are amongst the most frequent contributors. Teamwork is often a challenge, but collaborating across disciplines adds a layer of complexity to the dynamics. Today, we are going to discuss what and how art can contribute to human-robot interaction.
This is the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast. I am your host, Christoph Bartnick.
Robots have been used in the theater, exhibitions, comics, and music, to name just a few. Here is an example of a robot that collaborates with musicians.
The main project was when I was a postdoc in Gil Weinberg's lab at Georgia Tech. The robot was a robotic musician that played the marimba, which is this wooden xylophone, like a large wooden xylophone. I started there. I came from a human-robot collaboration lab. That's what I did my PhD in. And Gil Weinberg told me, well, can you make a musician collaborate with a robotic musician to play jazz? And I thought it was a really interesting problem because I used to play piano as a kid for many years, and I played jazz for a while. So my name is Guy Hoffman, and I'm an assistant professor in mechanical engineering at Cornell University. And I thought that music is a really difficult challenge because generally people are quite forgiving to small errors here and there in the timing and the action of robots, and they don't expect robots to be perfect, but with music you have really no leeway. And so I thought it would be a really interesting problem of human-robot collaboration to try to make a musician that plays jazz with you. Up until then, there were other people who worked on robot music, but all their work was set up in this call-and-response pattern where the human would play some music, and then the robot would analyze it and come up with a response that was somehow influenced by the human's playing. And in a way, this is also where most of HRI was at the time. So people would, you say something to the robot, the robot responds to you. And I thought that when music is really amazing is when everybody's just harmonizing together, everybody's playing their part. And it's just this ensemble that is almost like magic. And I thought that the challenge I wanted to set to myself with this project is to have the robot play with you while it's learning from you and adapting to you at the same time, so that there wouldn't be this back and forth interaction. This is what I spent almost 2 years on after that moment when I arrived.
The creation process requires artistic, engineering, and social skills, and hence artists and engineers work together on these projects. There are two types of collaboration.
Well, my name is David Saint-Onge. I'm currently a postdoctoral researcher at École Polytechnique de Montréal in Montreal, Canada, but I'll be starting as an associate professor in 2 months at École des Technologies Supérieures, so another university in engineering in Montreal. I published a couple of years ago a paper on the HRI conference about the different types of collaboration you can have between engineers and artists. There's, let's say, two big classic category that we often see. Either you're hired by an artist and then you're implementing the artist's needs in terms of technology, or you're collaborating with the artist and then together you're creating something that serves both realms. So for a long period of my career, I was more in the first part. So as a freelance, I worked with many artists developing what they needed, the technology that they needed for their artwork. And then when I came into university, I slowly decreased the amount of those contracts in my schedule to give more place to other kind of artistic collaboration that would serve also my research. So all the current project that I'm working on also have great contribution to mechanical engineering or interaction design. But I'm still working with artists, and we're collaborating with all the artists that I'm working with. We're collaborating together and creating something new. So obviously, when we start, there is a concept most of the time coming from the artist, and there's a research interest from my part, and we're trying to merge that together and to walk together into the design and development path until we get something that satisfies us both. Obviously, there's many possible artistic projects that do not require new development of technology or new design of interaction, if I speak for my own field. But since a couple of years, I'm referring those to colleagues that are working in that area, not researcher engineers that are working into that area. And I'm really more focused on the project that I see contribution for HRI or robotic community in general. The two types of project do exist. It's a matter of which one you pick. There's really a lot of artists out there looking forward to collaborate with the engineers and to push the boundary of what technology is currently able to do. And so some of them, it's just a hack of what is available, but a lot of them is really to push forward the technology in something that the original designer of that particular technology, for instance, never thought of, or to create something completely new that nobody thought of because they're having a completely different perception, at least in the field of robotic. Again, they're having a completely different perception and angle on the use and the relevance of what we're doing, and also on anthropomorphic attribute and the form and shape and the aesthetic. In any case, that's a kind of perception that we don't have as engineer, well, classic engineer, let's say, we don't have, at least that is clearly not part of our cursus academic curriculum. Just having this perception most of the time makes them see things in the current technology that seems for many people obvious, but that were actually never thought of in terms of application usage, but implementation also. So anyway, all that to say that there's different kind of artistic projects and are in collaboration, some of which will lead to contribution in our field, some other that will not lead to contribution to our field, but just to the art realm. So it's basically to select which one you, as an engineer or researcher, want to participate with. I'm still doing a couple of projects that do not have direct contribution in research, but I just find them really, really interesting, really intriguing. I think that by doing those other projects that I'm not seeing as a potential contribution or publication or worth a publication in our field, I think that they still inspire me some ideas for my other project. It's always a win-win situation.
I'm not sure if it is always a win-win situation. The collaboration can be challenging because of the world views of engineers and artists can be different.
Computer scientists and artists think very differently about the world. Computer scientists, they love things that are separable into modules, discrete, and they love the divide and conquer approach. I think it's because computer science comes from a history of mathematics. And there's this saying that, you know, a mathematician thinks about a problem in terms of sub-problems that can be solved, and then they stack together. And the same thing with computer scientists. It's often thought that you try to formalize problems as discrete problems that can be separated into different components and that have some kind of a step-by-step fashion to them. And any computer science student will learn very early on that you have a program counter or program pointer that moves step by step through the algorithm. And I think instead musicians and other artists, they have a bigger appreciation for holistic views of problems, where you understand that you can't separate things from each other. You can't say, okay, this is, you can solve this and solve this, and then you solve the combination of the two. The combination of the two is in itself the biggest problem. And so this is one thing. Second thing is that computer scientists, as many engineers, they like to model a problem into an abstract formulation of that problem and then solve that abstract formulation and then take the conclusion out back into the real world. Whereas artists, they like to explore and tinker and experience the problem and solve it through their actual interaction with the problem and not abstracting it away. And I think this is exactly where these two kind of clash and where you have to be very cognizant. And what I try to do in this project and other projects, and I think you can learn a lot to also beyond music, is to try to bring this idea of real-time experience and of holistic, tangible solution to a problem, to what is basically an engineering problem.
HRI and robotic in general, you're having a manual that describes you exactly what to expect from this and exactly how it is supposed to work and how to use it. Well, in art, it's the exact opposite. You have to find your way into interacting, if it's an interactive artwork, with it and interpret what is going on based on your own experience, based on your own feelings, based on what you're seeing and who you are. So that's completely different from what we're used.
At times, HRI researchers have both artistic and engineering skills and therefore do not rely on others to realize their work.
If I can, I would like to say something about how I approached this particular project. And the first few weeks I was stuck. I read about machine learning and AI, and I tried to think like which should be the best algorithm, and nothing came out. I was just weeks of no ideas. And then I talked to a friend of mine who's an opera singer, actually, and she said, why don't you just play with the problem? And I was like, what does that even mean? You know, I have a performance in 6 weeks and I have to write code, so I can't play with the problem. She said, I don't know what it means. I'm not a programmer, but try to think that you're 4 years old and you just got tasked with writing code for an improvisation robot. And she said, if it doesn't work out, just don't go. I said, interesting. So I kind of went into this improvisational mindset and I started just writing these like very small loops of behaviors and stacking them together. And I started playing around with actual behaviors of the robot by making these like 1 hour projects. I'm like, what if I can, how fast can I make this robotic arm move? And what does it sound like? I'm like, okay, let's keep this element. I'm saying, okay, what if I just try to see if I take all the notes from this particular key and use their ASCII code I just started playing around with it. And this is what eventually brought me to a lot of, I threw away, you know, 80% of what I did, which is also what artists are very good at doing and scientists are not good at doing. And I ended up with some like 4 ideas that ended up in the performance, which were only 4 of the 80 ideas that I had and that I programmed in a very quick amount of time. So in a way, the improvisational mindset enabled me to also do this project.
Daniel Kahneman, in his book Thinking Fast and Slow, introduced 2 modes of thinking that he labeled System 1 and 2. This labeling is as non-expressive as it could be, but what he refers to with System 1 is the fast intuitive thinking, while System 2 is the slow logical thinking. Does this dual processing theory explain the difference between artists and engineers?
I think that they both have to be at play. You have to go back and forth. In the end, I had to get a robot on stage, and there has to be something that detects whether I'm starting to play or not starting to play. But I'm a big believer in a multidisciplinary education. And I think one of the reasons is that you need to practice both types of thinking. You know, when you see artists trying to move into more engineering-related art projects, and there's a lot of examples for this, and you feel like, you know, they don't get what a robot is. They stay in these like very small achievements in many cases. So I believe System 1 and System 2 serves us very well together. We are not just reactive creatures that just experience the world and play with it. But we also, I don't think we can't get very far by just trying to decompose every problem into an abstract model and then solving it.
The robots need to be programmed to do anything, really. So what use is an intuitive artistic understanding if in the end you must program the robot using rational and formal programming languages?
So I have this recurring argument with my colleague Hadass Kreskazit, who's in my department. And I kept saying but that the beautiful thing about one of the 4 modules of the improvisation robot was that it wasn't planning. It was just trying to put itself into opportune situations from which it could then react well. And she said, that's planning. I was like, no, that's not planning. This is the opposite of planning. And we keep saying like, she says it is planning, it's just planning at a different time scale. And I said, no, this is not what planning is. In the end, everything is code, and you have to model it at some level.
One of the problems with robots is that they have no System 1, no intuition, no feeling. Hence, they cannot improvise and jam with a musician. But could you code some sort of intuition?
What I'm always trying to do is to try to model, and I want to say pretends to be, but something that is inspired by what happens when you're using intuition. I don't think we know enough about how intuition works for humans. I definitely am not an expert on this, but I also think that we don't have a good model of what makes an intuitive person intuitively good at things. I mean, just as we are saying, okay, we're modeling reinforcement learning as this temporal difference learning update function. And this is not reinforcement learning when you teach your dog to sit for a certain command. It's not the same, but it's inspired by. So I would say if I could do something that's inspired by intuition, this is good enough. This is interesting enough.
But what makes the collaborations across disciplines so difficult?
I think collaborations are really important here. You and I have been around enough different academic structures. The collaborations, they run into some of the same problems often. And part of it is that people are very afraid to listen to other people. People are used to, especially academic researchers and artists, are used to being on stage and being the people who speak and not the people who listen.
To be a bit famous or to have to be in front of the public to defend your own work. After a while, some people get arrogant out of it. I don't know, but it's clearly not only artists that take that path.
Could partners not learn from each other by listening?
Many artists feel that they can never understand the principles behind AI or behind engineering or behind, you know, electric engineering or robotics. And I think that's not correct. And people in engineering and science often feel like art is not serious in some way. It's not precise. It's not something that... So there's a lot of actually psychological barriers more than there are real barriers.
The Christchurch Art Gallery recently revealed its latest acquisition, a sculpture by Ron Mook. It shows an old man in his underpants sitting at a table. He stares at a chicken on top of the table, and the chicken stares back. Officials were quick to point out that no public funding was used for the purchase. While the sculpture does not fail to bring a smile to my face, I cannot avoid thinking if the $1 million spent could not have been used better helping solving some more important issues. Christchurch does not fall short on critical social problems. The earthquakes and terrorist attack left our community bruised, and the mental health facilities are severely underfunded. At times, art can indeed be perceived as being less useful or less serious.
That's why you have to be extremely structural. And I know people think art is some sort of this art and design, fluffy, lovely thing, but which unfortunately it's not. I would love it to be. You have to be methodological. You have to have methodology, like the spiral methodology of testing, yes. Developing. When you put a system, artistic or not, creative or not, into the public domain and you invite, you open up to the public to interact with it, it has to be bulletproof. Otherwise, it's a disaster. It's the end of your career. It's going to be another sad case of the technology failed. And I remember all these exhibitions in the 90s. You know, I'm going to Ars Electronica since I was a student. How many years? Fishbed was there for the 25th anniversary, and that was in 2003. We have this pressure. That's a very different... That's why, for me, I don't think, to be honest with you, and this is with the deepest respect I have for experimental arts and amazing painting, sculpture, it's a very different, the parameters for us to exist. Even before I moved to robotics, I spent 11 years at the Australian Centre for Field Robotics. I had two postdocs in a robotics environment. I can code, I can design, I can do mechatronic design. But the scientific approach is much more different than that. I still have the skill, the tool set to have enough mechanical drawings, so someone who's expert in the field can understand and do a perfect version. But the pressure for us was always, that's what it makes us different, not better, not worse, but different, is it has to work. And even for the concept to function, even to test the concept, the technology has to work.
I see a lot when I'm in a science and engineering environment is that they look at the humanities and the arts as something that is not as serious as science and engineering. Whereas having been sort of back and forth between these two worlds, I would say that you can't make this distinction at all. Whenever I see somebody who is an engineer and says, okay, I'm just gonna add this like artistic side to my work, they ignore that there's been 2000 years of history and culture, and people, very serious and smart people, have thought about these questions long before this particular graduate came along. And I think having respect for the traditions of other fields, while also believing that you can actually understand these things, I think this is the key. I do believe that anybody can understand in depth the basic principles of thought in a different field.
In my talk today, there was a talk, it was about social robotics being a multidisciplinary new area in robotics that it needs everyone. But that doesn't mean that everyone can be a pseudo something else. Mm. So I work with fantastic cognitive scientists. I work with fantastic neuroscientists. I'm so excited and inspired by them. I work with incredible AI experts. But I know who I am and my contribution is not in that area. Mm. So for example, Katsumi Watanabe, when we were doing a questionnaire for a new robot, it was my version and his version, right? His version was so much better. He's an expert. He's been doing that for so many years. So I think it's different. I wouldn't have the confidence. That shouldn't be communicated, that someone, you know, builds electronic systems and responsive installations, moves to robotics and starts analyzing data. That's a very dangerous territory.
I was working on voice control flying robots. And well, we had a lot of issue with surrounding noise, obviously with the motors, and there was a huge crowd around. So the understanding of what the performer was saying was really, really difficult to parse and to interpret. I was showing the result or like the state of the system to a choreographer, and he told me, well, why do we need the performer to speak? I was like, well, that's voice control. So we need the performer to speak and send commands and interpret the commands. And he just told me, well, why don't we as a performer to sing? And that completely changed the challenge. It was way easier to detect the singing because then that was completely different to a lot of background noise. It simplified a lot of the problem. And then obviously it was something completely different. At the time, no one has ever used singing to control a robotic system. Voice, sure, and it's close to voice, but then everybody understand that it's completely different than just speaking. And so we designed a system specifically made to parse the singing of a couple of different performers so that they would control the robotic system with that. And it worked really well in many different venues with huge crowds around and a lot of noise, even bad signal on the microphones and everything. So what I mean by like at each step, it's interesting to have their input to try to, you know, get around your problem, get another perspective and try something else that may be as interesting.
Do the reviewers appreciate multidisciplinary work?
The sad reality is that it's hard to get interdisciplinary work accepted to any conference or to any journal. There are some journals that are more open to these ideas. I've had the experience that the most interesting cross-boundary work that I've done has been rejected several times before it got accepted, finally. My skin is thicker these days, and I know that I see it more as a barrier of openness on the reviewer side than a problem with my own work, which is what I did when I was a student or a postdoc. And I think, you know, I always talk to students and I tell them, you know, if you're being rejected, it can be that maybe your idea just doesn't fit into somebody's specific mindset. It doesn't mean that the idea is wrong. And these, you know, cross-disciplinary projects take a long time to publish. My experience, and now I can look back at 15 years of experience, I can say they take the longest to publish, but they have the largest impact on the long term. And I've been trying to continue to work on the improvisation work, and I've been denied grants on it every year for a decade because people say it's nothing different than dynamic planning or it's not different than this or that. And I think this kind of misses, but it's something you just learn to accept.
Is the review process in art different from that in science?
This idea of throwing away ideas, which is very much in art and design, it's a staple. Like, you know that you have to throw away 80% of your ideas. And the second is this idea of critique, which I think is also very much missing in our field. And generally, I think in computer science is this idea of that you bring your work out and then people just tear it to pieces, which is really part of what artist education is. And again, since I sort of studied in both, I know where the difficult studies are. I mean, when you're in art school, you go in with 3 months of like non-stop, non-sleep labor. And an artist will say, has been done a million times, you know, what a waste of your time. And you walk home, you pack everything up and you go home to cry. And then you learn something about this idea of like having your artwork critiqued. Whereas here, you send it away, it comes back with some reviews, but this idea of critiquing, I think people can, you know, could really benefit from it also outside of art and design. In this case, I think also artists are thicker skinned because of this, because they know that they have to stand up and they have to sort of defend their work in a more of like a public setting. And I think there's something about this technique that is very useful. And it's not enough to use outside of art and design, in my view.
Walking away crying from a critique does not sound like an enjoyable experience for a student.
And it's not about being mean. It's not like about being like nasty to a student. I'm saying it's about being able to defend your work and abandon your work and have somebody tell you, well, this is, you know, trying to grow. You're a young person. You're trying to become something that's greater than an incremental change. And I think this is maybe the stakes are just higher.
What are the main contributions of art to HRI then?
The artist for me brings completely a new dimension, another dimension to those kind of development. Since I've worked a lot with them, I've started to understand a bit what they can help me with in terms of ideas, in terms of, again, the perception they have on our work and the influence that our work will have on the society, but also on the aesthetic aspect of our work. But by aesthetic, I really mean like the whole realm of the perception of the robots. So not just like, does it look nice, but all the aspect that a lot of researchers in HRI are digging into. So how is it perceived? Is it really interpreted the way the designer wanted and et cetera? All those questions in the design of an interaction or a robotic system met to interact with human, all of those questions benefit from the perspective of the artist on my own point of view. So even if I was to work on a project that was not meant to be an artwork or that was not involving any artist, and many times I bring artists in that I collaborate on other projects and just ask their point of view on what I'm doing, because that triggers a lot of interesting questions and that brings forward new ideas and, again, new perception on all of our work.
But does psychology not already study how people perceive robots?
Each discipline brings something, right? And I don't think the psychologist will bring the same thing as the artist. I think that the understanding of human perception, emotion, and interpretation of what is going on within the interaction may be grasped by both fields, but not the same way. Psychologists are obviously closer to science and are more using a methodology that is closer to science, obviously, and to our own realm, while artists are more based on the sensibility. And most of the time, the process for artists, but again, I'm not myself an artist, but most of the time what I understood is that artists will work by empathy. So by impersonating the interaction or the situation and try to ground to their own feeling what this triggers and how they can explain and explore this. So it's a completely different approach, methodology, to use, let's say, a more scientific term, than what psychologists would do.
What does an artist think about the contributions of art to HRI? Here's Professor Marie Vilonaki from the University of New South Wales.
Media arts in particular have the longest recorded history when it comes to people, technology and interaction. There's no other discipline that has such long history and such a widely experimental approach. But it's about people, technology and what happens, engagement. So to me, the word is experiential, experience, engagement, sharing spaces, in the case of social robotics.
David is organizing an art event at the ICRA conference, but I better let him make the pitch.
A huge integration of art that we're doing at ICRA. So it's really within the main program that we're bringing artworks and artists to participate to the conference. So it's not a side workshop or a social event. It's really within the conference that there's going to be major artworks, keynotes from artists, and a forum, student exhibitions, all those aspects integrated within the conference at different level. So it's going to be spread out through all the venue that you can see artworks and artists going around. So we really expect that the engineers, let's say the classic audience of ICRA, will be intrigued and will start discussion with those artists, and that from that will emerge new kind of collaboration and a more open mind on our community to collaborate with artists in future work and consider those kind of collaboration as good contribution for our community too.
If you're planning to go to ICRA in Montreal in May, have a look for the robotic art exhibition. Thank you for listening to the Human-Robot Interaction Podcast.